Three, two, one, and welcome back to the SBH podcast. And in this podcast, I have a guest, and it is my camera guy. And we're going to talk about the show and the really the amazing fishing we've had for the entirety of the full moon.
Yeah.
And what we've, the struggles that we've gone through with gear, really pretty much just this moon phase.
Yeah.
It's been killing us. But hey, it's part of the game, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I think on top of that, we'll also sort of go through a more detailed explanation of sort of how we do what we do and as far as like video and pictures and stuff. Because I have all my equipment here that I use when we're out in the rocks.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll sort of, this might be one to watch if you like to listen to it for the most part, because we have some cool stuff here and it might be cool to have a visual to go along with the audio.
Yeah. And because really, this is going to be pretty much based out of, like, I get a lot of questions about, like, how I get the photos that I get. And it's not me, because I can't do that. But, and really, if you want to get photos like I do, you need to be fishing with somebody. And you need to be fishing with somebody that knows what they're doing with the camera. Because a lot of the time, you know, we get good photos, but it's, like, it comes at a cost.
Yeah,
and
for that, sure.
And it's not cheap.
Yeah, and so I guess we can sort of start with sort of talking about what's been going on recently with us and sort of what we've been dealing with as far as the fishing goes and as far as the filming as well. So,
do we want to get started off of that?
Yeah, let's start with the fishing, get people warmed up a little bit.
Okay. It's been really, really interesting this week. And obviously, as the fishing has progressed, and I've been saying it for a long time, I was like, I haven't got a 40-pound fish yet. I really want to get a 40-pound fish. And the moon phase to do it is that first full moon in August. And it just always seems to be that moon phase that gets me that big fish. And I knew it was going to happen just because there was a lot of big fish around. And we started it off with, like, I don't know, 5-6 days before the moon phase. And we were pretty much since then, it's been every single night we've gotten at least one bass 40 plus inches every night. And but it's been slow. It's one of those things that you get to a spot, you got to fish it, and you got to fish it hard, and you got to really, really wait for those fish to come stage up and then get your eel. It's not been a bite. It's not, I wouldn't call it like a bite as in like you're getting multiple big fish in a row, but you're targeting that one monster bass. And we've been fortunate enough to pull a 40 pound bass this week, on top of many 20 pound bass, a few high 20 pound bass. And that's been really awesome. I've been doing mostly eeling. I've tried some plugs. Plugs have not been working as well for me, but it's whatever. Plugs tend to work better in the fall for me anyway. I use mostly plugs in the fall, but I really am trying to get those monster bass, and I want to be, you know, the goal was to break 40 pounds, and we did it earlier before even this big hurricane that's going to move through and make the fishing really good happened. And I really wanted to do that, and we got it early in the moon phase, and this hurricane hasn't even showed up yet. And when you have a full moon, you have a hurricane, and it all meets at one point, it's lights out fishing, just because that super big low pressure on top of the astronomical high tides is just makes the fishing out of this world. I've had nights in the fall where we had big storms come through. They're somewhat hurricane-like storms, but I had nights with Joe from Puma Plugs where we had dozen fish over 40 inches and a few that were over 40 pounds. And that's like, we're hoping to get there later this week. It should happen. But the bass have been feeding heavily in deep water. You've got to search for those deep water, you know, rises from like super deep water to shallower water or to boulders. And that's where the bass have been hanging. Cause the water's really warm right now. It's probably 72, 73 degrees where we're fishing, and that's warm for bigger fish, and they don't tend to feed very aggressively at that point. But I kid you not, these fish are fighting so hard. Like, for their size, we've been having awesome fights. Like, I caught a 40-inch bass it was a 40-inch bass the other night. This is before I hooked a 40-pound bass. And I was fishing with my 200 Van Stahl, attached my GSB, Lamb & Glass GSB Skinner, and I had pretty tight drag on that. I probably had 18 pounds of drag on that fish, and it took me for a run. I mean, it took a solid 30 yards of line out, and just straight screaming line. It was awesome. It was a really hard fight, but when I was fighting this fish, I felt it, and it was like, man, this fish doesn't feel super heavy, because when you're fishing, when you're hooking to a 40-pound fish, you're like, oh, you know, it doesn't move when you first hook into it. But this fish, I was moving a little bit, but it was just pulling so much drag, and we were fighting it, and it was screaming drag, and then I got it in, and it was like, oh, it's a 40-inch bass. It's still 20 pounds, still an awesome fish. Any bass over 40 inches is still awesome. You can't complain with a 20-plus pound fish. But, yeah, they weren't, like, huge, and we wanted those monsters. That was what we were looking for. We're looking for those monster fish to get on film. And so we got into the wetsuit swimming game, and we'd been swimming out to rocks, and we were, you know, covering a lot of ground. We were doing a lot of swimming and fishing all these boulders and trying to get to where these bigger fish are. And we, on a whim, went to one spot one day, and
yeah,
it happened. We hooked a 40-inch bass, hook into this thing, doesn't move. I'm like, I told you, it's a monster. And so what I do is I lock my drag down on my reel and for the hook setting, because you don't want your drag to slip. Boom, I hook it into this fish. I loosen it down two cranks, and that's still on a Vansal VSX 275, is still gonna be that heavy drag. It's gonna be in over 20 pounds of drag for sure. And that thing was peeling drag. I don't know if you can see it on the video. I don't know if you've actually seen the video yet.
I've seen the video, but
yeah. I was leaning, like, I'm kidding you not, I was leaning all the way back into this fish. And if it broke, I would have fallen backwards. Like, I had to do that, or he was going to pull me in the water. That's how powerful that fish was. And we managed to land it in a short order. It didn't fight too long, but it pulled like 40 yards of drag. Like, it was pulling line like crazy. And we landed it in probably under 2 minutes.
Yeah, it was not a very like long fight as far as fights go.
But it was intense. It was powerful. Fish.
For sure. And I guess sort of like when you look at sort of the way that we normally handle these fish, it's like you'll catch it. I'll turn on my camera with the light and everything, and you turn on the GoPro, because that's sort of one thing that we've been doing as far as for audio. We use a GoPro because it can deal with the conditions, and it's like right there. So it gets a pretty nice like audio of him talking and the like drag going screaming. So that's cool to have like that component to it. Mm-hmm. But he'll land the fish. We normally like bring it to some more calm water that you can sort of stand in
or swim in.
And swim in.
Yeah.
And like I like to sort of get in the water with Finn and the fish and sort of to get that like really in the action kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And that's sort of something that we figured out. We've got it down to almost a science. Sometimes it really goes wrong, like it did the other night.
GoPro died.
Yeah.
Flash broke.
Yeah. So I guess all
camera lens was fogging up.
Yeah. So I guess we're gonna go through sort of the gear that I use on an average night when we're out there fishing to keep my stuff safe and to be able to take the pictures and take the video that we do. And a lot of this stuff you guys haven't seen yet, because most of the really big fish footage is coming up in future episodes of the show, namely the next episode of the show, which is coming out on the 15th of August.
It's gonna be stupid good.
So we're sort of working on that, but I'm going to sort of explain what my setup looks like when we're out there fishing at night. Mm-hmm. And like in the surf and me getting in the water to film with Finn and the fish. So the base of everything is the GH5, which is a great camera for what we're doing as far as like run and gun filmmaking and being able to sort of keep everything. It has a good internal stabilization and like a dual stabilization with the lens. And so then on top of that, I'm putting this, which is a remote flash trigger that I took apart, and you'll see why I took it apart in just a second. So this slides right into the hot shoe. And basically what it does is when I take a picture, this sends out a signal that then a receiver can use to trigger the flash. So I have that, and then I have this, which has been a godsend for us.
Yeah.
This is an underwater housing for the camera that is perfect. in terms of like keeping it dry. It's rated for diving, although I don't know how much I would trust it to dive with it, but it is, it does the job for sure for what we're doing.
Yeah.
And it makes sure that I'm not getting any water in my camera. And so the camera will slide in there. And the reason why I had to take apart that trigger is so that it will fit right in the top of this housing. So then when this is closed in, there's no water that's gonna get into the camera. And so I can bring this thing underwater and I can take some underwater footage, which we've been doing, which has been crazy. And that you've sort of seen at the end of episode 2 with that underwater footage of the fish that was entirely by virtue of having one of these.
Yeah.
And so then onto the side of that, I add this light, which I have in two plastic bags to keep it dry. And it's still like we've had some issues with it. Like I'm not sure how much of this you'll be able to see. Actually, you can't see it at all, so I'm not even going to try. But like half of the LEDs are out on this just because it's gotten wet and it's been like in the water. So that's sort of another thing we've been dealing with is it's difficult to keep all the gear dry because there's not a lot of people that are doing what we're doing as far as being in the water and like in completely in the elements.
Yeah.
So things like a flash aren't going to be like weather sealed for the most part. And if you are getting like a diving flash, then that's a whole nother level of expense because it's such a specialized piece of equipment.
But let's just break it down for everyone because, you know.
Yeah.
Let's just break it down for everyone.
And all the
one
stuff
of those flashes. Yeah. One of those flashes is what? $180? Something
no,
like
no,
that?
No, one of the flashes is $80 flash.
Oh, it's $80? Okay.
So it's not that bad.
So it's actually not too bad. I thought it was worse. Then the light is what, $30?
Yeah, this is like a $35 light from Amazon. And everything, all the gear is in the description if you want to like take a look at what it is.
Yeah.
And so the like the lights are sold separately from the batteries, but it's not like as far as so with the flash is like $84. The light like this is $35. And versus like a diving light with like a flash on it or something like that would be like closer to the like $700 range,
yeah,
which is incredibly expensive. And it makes sense just because it's such a specialized piece of equipment.
And that's the thing I was talking about this. Well, I don't know if to you or other people, but like the stuff that we're getting, it's like getting a Van Stahl versus like a Penn Battle. We're getting like the Penn Battle for what we're doing, mm-hmm. which still works and it's very solid and functions well versus dropping, you know, $700 to $1,000 on a fully sealed reel that's not going to break. And then what I always justify buying Van Stahls for is if you break a flash like that, which we've only done once this whole season. Mm-hmm. So if we broke it more, then it would be more justifiable to buy a $700 light, mm-hmm. but light slash flash. But yeah, so we haven't done it broken it enough to the point that I'm like, we need to get another one. Mm-hmm. If we end up doing a second season of this, depending on how much people end up enjoying this, mm-hmm. Then we probably will end up buying a dive light.
Yeah, and at that point, that. Like if we're doing...
Because we want to get some more stuff.
Yeah.
And the tough part about this season is like coronavirus has helped us like be able to film the entirety of this season, mm-hmm. but it's hurt us in the fact that we were planning on doing collabs with people. And we can't anymore. Because like a lot of the people that we wanted to collab with are, you know, from New York, New Jersey, and Maine and whatever. So it was like one of those things that like I wanted to go collab with some people around, but I wasn't able to do it. So I was only collabing really with like local people that are in my area. And it's just unfortunate, but it happens, you know?
Yeah, and so sort of going back to like what our usual routine is, so normally I'll have the flash, which I'll bring out in just a second.
Yeah.
I'll normally have that in my backpack, just because it doesn't like to stay on the camera very well. So this is sort of what I'm carrying with me when we're out on the rocks. I have this with a strap attached to this little eye bolt here.
Yeah.
And that's sort of attached over my chest.
Yeah.
So I'm just hanging on to this. You're fishing.
Yeah.
Then when you catch a fish, mm-hmm. the first thing I'm doing is I pick this up, pull off the lens cap, turn on the camera, because it has the controls to be able to do that. And then I'm turning on the light. And so then this is sort of how I'm filming when he's reeling in the fish.
Yeah.
And so this allows me like good versatility in terms of like, if I need to be sort of in the water with you or sort of be able to do that since this is in two bags. Like we had been using it with one bag and it had been leaking, and that's sort of how the light broke a little bit.
Yeah, which we're going to probably end up having to buy another light.
Yeah, but now it's in two bags and that's been holding up really well so far.
Yeah.
But something like this, I can bring this underwater. Like I could probably go a few feet down underwater and it would be completely fine. And completely like dry and ready to go.
And that's how we're getting a lot of those shots where you're like at water level with me holding the fish in the water. And then you get the questions that are like, why are you going in the water with the fish? And that's because like for the 40 pound bass, I never took it out of the water. I never put it on my boga grip. I never pulled or like put it on my boga grip and lifted it up. I kept that fish under the water the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
I only had held it up a little bit for some picks,
mm-hmm.
and then it went right back under the water. You know,
yeah.
And then when we released it, we swam out with the fish. We made sure it went. I tried to hit its tail once to get it to kick off. It didn't really kick off. I grabbed its tail again. We kept reviving it. I was figurating it in the water, and then it bit down on my thumb, shook really hard, almost broke my finger, and then it was out of there. You know, it was gone.
And then so we can go into the flash. So I have two flashes here because we broke one of them. So this one was in a plastic bag. And it fell into the water. So we were in the water with a pretty big fish. I think this is well over 40 inches.
Yeah, this was a 45-inch bass.
Yeah.
We swam out to a rock, boulders that were further out. And we swam out there and we eeled that.
Yeah.
And
so I had this in a plastic bag.
Yeah.
And it was up in my backpack. And so I got it out when he caught the fish.
Yeah.
I like ran up to my backpack, grabbed this, threw it on, and then like took my pictures, then I took off the flash so that I could film underwater with this because I'm not really comfortable bringing the flash underwater in just a plastic bag.
Yeah.
So I put that up on the rock, but I didn't realize that rock was being swept over by waves.
Yeah.
And so I was starting to film the release footage, and then Finn's plug bag had broken. And so we had put that up on the rock too. And all of a sudden I feel the plug bag on the back of my feet, on the back of my calves. And I'm like, oh no.
Yeah.
And so I look up and this was just washing off since that was the one that broke, was washing off the rock. So I like ran and grabbed it and moved everything higher up.
Yeah.
But it's just sort of the perils that like it comes with what we're doing.
Yeah. I mean, it's just tough to do it's not like, there's a reason why nobody's done what we've done.
Yeah.
And it's because you break so much stuff when you're filming. It's how it's going to work. And I don't think people are willing to do that. That's what I was saying. I've been saying for a while. I was like, I don't think there's any other film out there that's showing what real hardcore surfcasting is.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, because the people that are surfcasting are that hardcore at doing it, don't want to have somebody turn on the sun in the middle of the night. And two, that... you know, most filmmakers don't want to go through that amount of... You look at his legs.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you can see this man's legs, but they're cheese grater on the rocks.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing, you know, it's intense. It's a full contact sport and it's not easy on your camera equipment. You're falling with it.
Yeah.
He was filming me the other night with a 40-inch bass, fell down with his camera equipment.
Yeah.
I lost that thing too, which is sad.
But
whatever.
Yeah, and so sort of continuing on, if you look at this, it's sort of an L shape, and the bottom of this is the like receiver for the remote trigger. So I can stick this onto just sort of a cold shoe mount that I ended up sort of screwing this like metal L bracket onto the side of this. So now the flash is up here, and if you remember that little piece of equipment that I stuck, the little trigger that I stuck inside the housing, that will communicate with this. So then when I'm in photo mode and it's dark enough, which I can be right here, so then if I'm taking a picture, which of course it's not wanting to do because of the autofocus, but
yeah.
So even though the camera is inside the housing, it still can communicate with a flash to take the picture. So that's been... Like, once we figured that out, it really sort of changed the game for us because it means that I can be in the water with Finn and get those really cool pictures that otherwise we just wouldn't be able to get because I don't want to ruin my gear.
Yeah.
And
there's not a lot of people out there that even get the photos that you've been getting with that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's just a great camera.
Yeah. And it, like, I sort of have mainly got into video was sort of my... the starting point for me, but photos, a lot of the same concepts apply. A lot of the same stuff is it's a similar thing, obviously, because you're still using a camera and the video is just a bunch of photos in a row.
Yeah.
Technically. And, so it sort of, the camera works really well for photos and that's sort of what we've been doing.
Yeah.
But it's not foolproof. Every single like setup that you could come up with is going to have some kind of fault to it. Mm-hmm. And we ran into that the other night, where my remote trigger that I have inside the housing, because I took it apart, it was connected to the hot shoe with two wires, and one of them came detached, which meant that it wasn't communicating with the flash, and so I had to pull the camera out of the housing, which meant I couldn't be written in the water, and then it was fogging up because it wasn't ready for the humidity, and the flash was acting up,
and the GoPro broke.
Yeah, it was really not a good time for us.
And I was talking to him. I was like, out of all the camera equipment that we have and that we use, the GoPro was the last thing that I thought we could break.
Yeah,
and it got water in it.
Yeah. And it was like in the front LCD screen. Like, it's a pretty, like, to be fair, it's not like the newest model of GoPro. This is like a Hero 5, I think.
Something like that.
Which is like several years old at this point. I think they're on the 8 at this point. So it's not the newest camera of all time.
Yeah.
But it got water behind the like front LCD screen.
But still.
Which it really shouldn't happen because it's built for dealing with more harsh conditions than we're doing. Like, at the most, it's underwater for like a couple minutes.
Yeah.
But people use them like scuba diving and surfing and stuff. Yeah. So
that shouldn't be our problem. And, you know, I mean, that's the thing. It shouldn't happen.
Yeah.
But it's funny because it just shows you how there's just not a lot of stuff built for what we're doing.
Oh, yeah. And it's an interesting thing to try to figure out. And I spent a while trying to think about, like, how I was going to get the camera to communicate with the flash. And there are a bunch of different ways of doing it. But this ended up being the, like, most efficient way that I could think of. So that's sort of what we ended up doing. And it's been working really well so far. Like, we've got some really, really cool shots.
And as far as, like, underwater housing camera-wise goes, I mean, we are, I would say it's for camera gear, we're balling on a budget with this stuff.
I mean, sort of. Like, there is, as with fishing, there is definitely an upfront cost to everything.
Yeah.
And I feel like, so we've found, I think, the best value for money.
Yeah, that's what I would say.
That we can find. So, like, in terms of, like, underwater housings, again, very specialized equipment, not many people are using them, so they're more expensive, and that's just sort of a fact of life.
Yeah.
And it's been sort of lucky that we're in the time period now where there's so many consumer camera products that are sold at much lower price points than they otherwise would be. And that hasn't really reached the underwater footage and the, like, that kind of realm yet. So pretty much most of the gear is sort of not anything that you're going to be able to get for cheap. Like, most underwater housings are like well over $1,000 combined cost with like the lens port and the housing and the whole thing. But this one's like about half that price. And I think it like shipped all the way from Hong Kong.
It did. In the middle of Corona.
Yeah.
Like at the height of it.
Yeah. And this is made by Sea Frogs. And they do a good job. Like, it's a very solid case, and I would trust it with it, like, what we're doing especially.
But I wouldn't trust diving.
Yeah. But also there's a lot of stuff that I sort of had to work around. Like, you don't have access to all of the dials and buttons, and you obviously don't have access to the touchscreen. So I had to sort of remap different settings to like different, like scroll wheels that I wouldn't normally have them attached to.
Yeah.
Just so that I could access them while it's in the housing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that was also sort of a key for me, that I didn't have to like go through the settings menus with, just with these buttons, which is a little bit cumbersome, especially when he's like reeling in a big fish and I have to like adjust the settings and everything.
Yeah.
And there have been times that I've had to like open up the housing and like change a camera setting and then close it.
Yeah.
Like when you caught that big fish during the day, on top water.
Yeah.
We didn't have a microphone cause the GoPro was dead and I had to pull it out of the housing and just try to use the on camera mic.
Hey,
so
that, I mean, you're going to see that on the film too. I mean,
yeah,
we had one day where we just destroyed a bunch big fish on top water. And that's the thing, like, we have a lot of really awesome stuff. I mean, these were not huge by any means, but they're all over 40 inches.
Yeah.
And
we have some, like larger ones.
Yeah, I mean, we had a 30-pounder that day, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of stuff in there that.
I'm, like, so excited, like, because after this is done, we're going to start editing the big fish episodes.
Yeah.
And I'm so excited to edit those episodes because it's reliving what already happened. So that's the thing. Like, I think that it's so cool what we're doing. Not for you guys, but for me personally. Yeah. It's so awesome to be able to relive what I did. It kind of just, in the wintertime, it's going to be an awesome thing to look back to and be like, you know, it happened again.
Yeah.
And that was my biggest worry throughout the entirety of the season. You know, can I repeat my season of last year? And I'm doing better than I did last season.
Mm-hmm. And, well, I mean, if you look at sort of, like, what we've done so far in terms of the show,
yeah,
it's really nothing compared to what we're about to
do. Yeah.
Because, so, like, the first episode obviously didn't catch anything except for those tiny little fish at the end.
Yeah.
And that was just because it's the springtime and we were trying to give sort of an honest look at, like, how much time you were putting in to try to catch that first, like, schoolie of the year.
Yeah.
And then second episode, we sort of picked it up a little bit. We had some footage of a bigger fish, but nothing crazy.
Yeah.
And then third episode, we had all this estuary footage that was really cool and sort of a cool storyline that we wanted to present.
Yeah.
And so I edited that, and I think I did as much as I could with what we had.
Mm-hmm.
And I think turned out pretty well as far as, like, watchability.
For sure.
And, like, he doesn't catch anything big, but it's still a cool thing to watch.
Yeah, people that were, like, non-fishermen thought that it was the best episode video quality and, like, edited wise. And it was funny because I was almost worried. I was like, ah, that could be a scrapped episode, you know, because it was in between moon phases. It was early spring and you guys are going to be watching it in that height of the season. So if you kind of have to think back to, like, okay, this is May, June, you know, early May, June timeframe, me learning a new area. That's what you kind of have to think back to during that episode. But what's going to happen now is the next three episodes, even maybe four or five episodes, are going to be all 40-plus inch bass.
Yeah. Well, and you look at, like, so what I have been doing all this morning has been basically just taking all the footage of fish that are, like, over 40 inches and putting them in a timeline.
Yeah.
And I have over 2 hours of just fighting, talking about, and releasing the fish.
Yeah, of bass over 40 inches.
Yeah.
All of these bass are over 40 inches, up to 48 inches.
And that's so just raw footage is, like, is 2 hours.
Yeah.
Which is insane because I had, I think, like, probably, I think I had under an hour and a half of, like, total footage for the estuary episode.
So you had, like an hour and 20 minutes or something?
Yeah. I don't know. It was something like that.
Footage.
So
yeah.
I was really not working with a lot in that situation. And this one, it's like I have a ton of footage to work with.
Yeah.
And we have a ton of bass that aren't over 40 inches.
Yeah.
That I don't know what we're going to do with
them. And that's the tough thing. And maybe they'll end up being bonus episodes and or extra mess around footage, you know, that I'll just edit on my own at some point in the winter and just put it out as just free content for you guys. But other than that, I mean, that stuff is... Because we have a lot of, like, 28-inch to 30-inch bass. It's just, like, you know, it's cool to catch a 30-inch bass, but it's, like, for what we're doing right now, it's, like, if it's pretty much 35 or bust, in my opinion. Like, from
like,
what we're trying to get on film.
We've been catching, like, smaller fish and not even turning on the camera.
Yeah.
Like, because when Finn hooks a fish, I'll ask if it's big and he'll tell me, and if it's not, then we just don't turn on the camera.
Yeah. And that's the thing, like, we probably, and that's gone up to what now, 30 inch bass to me is, like, not big enough for us to turn on our camera.
Yeah.
Because that's what we've been doing now. Like, we're not turning on cameras for 30 inch bass. And then we have, like, then even that, like, even the 40 inch bass I hooked yesterday, I hooked into him. Kind of was, or no, was it this? I don't know which one it was. One of the fish, I was not sure. I was like, I guess it's small, and then it woke up and started screaming drag. I'm like, yeah, this is a big fish.
Yeah. So, we have just a lot of content to work through. And I think it's going to be really interesting to sort of see how people react to it as it starts to.
And we have better music now.
That's also true. That was something that we really sort of put some time into, was trying to find, because for the first two episodes. It was the music service we were using, because this is a whole other thing that doesn't get talked about a lot, is just the difficulty of finding music that you can use on YouTube that's not going to get like copyright claimed.
It's not used in everybody's video.
That's not used in like every person ever's video.
Yeah.
And that like is good music.
Yeah.
So finding like things that you can get most of those, like those factors, but it's really hard to get all of them.
Yeah.
And our first, we found a music service that we started using, that you like, you pay for it, but you get, a license for the music, so you don't have to deal with copyright issues and,
yeah,
and everything like that.
But it's not like a ridiculous amount of money.
No,
we're not paying like a lot.
Yeah, it's not that bad. And but we paid for it for like 2-3 months.
Yeah.
We just scoured their library, and we realized, we came to a point where we're like, this isn't really any better than the YouTube free music library,
yeah,
and we're paying like $15 a month for it.
Yeah.
So it just wasn't worth it. So we
just
went on a quest.
We did
to find a better music service. And we ended up going with a service called MusicVine, which they do a good job. I think they license individual songs, but you can also get a plan that you can sort of license like an unlimited number. And it turned out to be, I think, less expensive than the other one for like a whole year, but you could only pay for it. You couldn't pay for it monthly.
Yeah,
so
you had to pay. So we paid for a whole year worth it, but it's paying off in a big way. And it's, you know, it's music that you would see, like it's good music.
Yeah.
I've heard lots of that music in like TV shows and in movies. Like it's pretty well used music, but it's also like, that's the quality that it is, that big movies and TV shows are using it.
Well, and I described it to him when I was first sort of looking for them, that it's like holding something plastic versus holding something made of metal.
Yeah.
It's like you can like feel the quality of it, and like even if you just sort of
listen like to how the quality of the music is,
yeah,
you should be
exactly
saying.
Yeah,
yeah. Like it doesn't feel like cheap, just cranked out crappy music.
Yeah.
It feels like actually something that somebody put time into,
yeah,
and that
sure
actually helps you lead them. Like, cause that's the other thing. Like you have to like enhance the mood of the thing that's going on in the video.
Yeah.
And, which is difficult to do, but if you find the right music, and I'm sure you guys all know of any videos really out there that they have the right music at the right time, you're like, wow, that's really cool. Because the music just felt really cool with that thing.
Yeah. And like if you listen to it critically, you'll be able to hear the difference in quality between the music in episode 2 and the music in episode 3.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, we found
like okay.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, like we would have taken any song on this MusicVine place if we heard it like on the other one that we were using.
And this is, I don't think we really need to say this, but this isn't like sponsored by them or anything.
No,
like, we're,
we're definitely not sponsored by them. Yeah.
but legitimately, it's a lot better quality. And I think that that's really going to sort of reflect on.
This is not me raving about Stormer again and actually dropping it at the end of the video.
but still, I think that even if you think about like sort of what we're trying to do, like even for me when I'm editing, having music that sort of creates that like mind frame for me about like what I'm sort of going for, the mood I'm going for, the sort of pacing I'm going for, that really helps me a lot to sort of have that. And it might be just because that's sort of how I started out editing. Like I would always have my music first and edit like to the music versus editing first and then adding the music afterwards.
Yeah.
So it's a very different way of thinking and a very different way of editing. And sort of having to generate that pacing and like the good storyline on your own is a lot more difficult than having music there. So it's a huge help to have really cool music that I'm editing to, and that sort of like gets me hyped and gets my brain in the right place for what I'm doing.
And that's really, and that's important for you as, you know, watching the video.
Yeah.
That's super. It's if you can get into that same mind frame where it gets you hyped about watching it, then we've done our jobs.
Yeah. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
I don't know. We've definitely been going for the allotted amount of time. Yeah, we've been going for a good amount of time.
So yeah, I guess we'll end it there.
Yeah. So thank you guys for listening and watching this podcast.
And again, everything that we've talked about is in the description.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to take a look at what we like as far as camera gear, it's all there.
Yeah, and just that it helps us out too if you get it through the links. So just if you want to help support what we're doing, yeah, and you want any of the equipment, just go follow the Amazon links. And thank you guys so much for watching this podcast, and I'll see you next time.